Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Van Weba, and alongside me, as always, is the man who gave himself his own nickname for tonight, Mr. Spencer Afro Thunder Williams.
Fantastic. I'm glad we've gotten to the point where you can just be lazy about the nicknames.
I didn't have to. I really didn't have to because you gave it to me. You handed it to me on a silver platter and said, here you go. And I could not, in our relationship, in the friendship that we've had for so long, I could not deny you that wonderful opportunity.
No, you could have. Very easily. It's literally doing nothing.
And the great thing is, this has nothing to do with the movie that we're talking about tonight, as we got a great show in store for you. We will be talking about the last film, unfortunately, of the career of Satoshi Kon, and that is Paprika. So join us as we get into that film and dive into it. But before we do, Spence, give them that opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also connect with us on the social page at facebook.com/filmlosophers, on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. We got over 200 episodes on our website. Check us out, filmlosophers.com. We've had a great run so far this fall. We did a whole month of Bruce Lee. We did the third Bill and Ted movie, which is kind of out of nowhere. And then I was going to see
that Bill and Ted movie.
We were planning to see it either way. We were going to see it. That's what was going to happen. We were going to see it. And then we also just decided to do an impromptu month for Satoshi Kon. So, hey, we're here. Get over it. But as I said, we have a great show in store as we're going to be talking about the final film of the filmography of Satoshi Kon, and that is 2006's Paprika. This film was uniquely made, and it was one of those types of films that, honestly, if you see it, you're going to get a lot of unique vibes of other films that we'll get into that were derived or inspired by this particular film. But before we get into any more, Spencer, give him that official synopsis goodness.
In the near future, a revolutionary new psychotherapy treatment called PT has been invented. Through a device called the DC Mini, it is able to act as a dream detective, to enter into people's dreams and explore their unconscious thoughts. Before the government can pass a bill authorizing the use of such advanced psychiatric technology, one of the prototypes is stolen, setting the research facility into an uproar. In the wrong hands, the potential misuse of the device could be devastating, allowing the user to completely annihilate a dreamer's personality while they are asleep. Renowned scientist Dr. Atsuko Chiba enters the dream world under her exotic alter ego, codename Paprika, in an attempt to discover who is behind the plot to undermine the new invention.
Directed by renowned anime filmmaker Satoshi Kon, the film stars Megumi Hayashibara and Cindy Robinson as Dr. Atsuko Chiba. We also have the film Toru Furuya and Yori Lowenthal as Dr. Kosaku Tokiida, Toru Emori and Michael Forrest as Dr. Inui, and Akio Otsuka and Paul St. Peter as Detective Toshimi Tanakawa. So, unbeknownst to most people, if this movie looks extremely familiar, it's because Christopher Nolan's Inception heavily is influenced by this film. Unless you've been living under a rock and haven't seen Inception, Inception is essentially the film that is about dreams and entering them and crimes and over, blah, 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 blah.
And it also introduced that big wah sound.
Inception was the reason why now you get that like that sound. I'm pretty sure I just clipped really bad in that. Yeah, that's where you get that sound from in a lot of scores nowadays. So, but it also took heavily from the plot of this movie. So, which, interesting enough, I think we figured out, when did Inception come out?
08.
It was like 08 or 09.
Yeah.
It was one of those movies that came out much, much after.
2010.
So 4 years after. Mm. Ah, thieves. and also another little thing, and mind you, this review is going to have spoilers because it's just too difficult to explain without them.
Even with spoilers, it's difficult to explain what's happening if you haven't seen the movie.
The unique thing about this film is at the end of the movie, Konikawa, the detective, is going to see a movie called Dreaming Machine. This is actually Satoshi Kon's final film when he was working on, which he was working on, but eventually left incomplete as he passed away. Spencer had mentioned right after we saw the film, he's like, yeah, I think they left an Easter egg for the last one. And which, if you see at the end of the film, Detective Konikawa is making his way to the theaters, and you can actually see all of Satoshi Kon's films on the marquee. And then he sees this one and he decides to go and see that one. But there's always some element of the previous film. It's like Pixar, but he does it a lot better and more tasteful. he puts little pictures or puts little hints in his films of the previous films or of previous films he's worked on, which is great. And so in this one, this was supposed to be a hint towards his upcoming film, which is unfortunate that, you know, he was unable to finish.
Yeah.
And obviously, with everything that we've been mentioning, this is Satoshi Kon's last film before he did pass away. But as we round out this month, as we round out everything, this preemptive, just impromptu Satoshi Kon fest, if you will, that actually would have been a good kind of, anyway, a good way to title it.
Oh yeah, Satoshi Kon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good.
See, we're after the fact thinkers. We don't think of this beforehand.
It takes us a while, but we get there.
We'll get there. As we round out this entire month of celebrating the life and filmography of one Satoshi Kon, it's unique to end off on a film that seems to, and the thing is, mind you, it's been a while since I've seen Paranoia Agent. But this seems to be more in the realm of sci-fi than his previous films.
Right.
But at the same time, it definitely still feels very much like one of his movies. Like, this movie is so unique. It has elements of sci-fi in it and horror and has elements of romance all in this anime that at some point in time, you kind of get lost in which story thread you're kind of following. But it's okay because this particular movie kind of brings everything full circle as it wraps up. It's like this chaotic entanglement of storylines and plot threads that pay off as the film ends. You just got to sit there and kind of see the chaos that happens in it. Because I got to admit, full disclosure, I'm glad I saw this movie later on, like recently, rather than when I was younger, because I'm pretty sure if I would have saw it when I was younger, I would have gotten nightmares. There are scenes in this movie that just really kind of rock my boat. And I'm like, that's not okay. Like, dolls should not be doing that. That's no. And mind you, this movie, it's not to say this movie's bad or it's just, you know, but there are the imagery in this movie and the development of the scenes really do work a number on you when you're watching it. Like, you're really invested in the scene and you're like, oh my God, what is that? Like, you're watching this face morph in screen. And it's like, no, that's not supposed to happen that way. But you were mentioning, when was the first time, because we had talked about this off air, when was the first time you actually saw this film?
This was during the Netflix run of the late 2000s that I keep bringing up in all these anime reviews.
See, we're going to have to do like just a whole episode or maybe an extra credit episode on your run-in with Netflix during the early 2000s. Because it's like, you're like, yeah, you know, they delivered my movies along with the cheeseburger that I asked them to pick up or something. Like, I feel like you had this special relationship with Netflix that nobody
because
else had.
I didn't have cable, so like, I got all of my anime from Netflix at the time, so it was a very good relationship.
So around what time?
Probably like 2008, 2007.
So around the time the film actually released.
Yeah, but I don't know if it was in English back then, because I know they got spotty with a few of them.
That's a good point. I don't know when the dub was released.
Yeah, because it wasn't until Tokyo Godfathers this year when...
2019.
When they released it in English for the first time.
So, yeah, I believe it was... I'm looking it up right now. I think it was 2019. But... This movie carries a lot of unique connotations in terms of like what Satoshi Kon was trying to do, kind of recognizing the opportunities with technology at the time, but not making it all about, like, even though the movie's about technology, you can still tell
the backseat, really.
Yeah, it is. It's like it's the backdrop, if you will, to the overarching story. You have this beautiful dynamic of the juxtaposition of this one person, this one woman, Dr. Chiba, who's got one personality she has when she is in the real world, and then a totally different personality that's not even, I wouldn't even say like subconscious, like it's not like an alter ego. I don't think it's an alter ego. No. It's more like a subconscious mindset, like, or persona, because it has like a whole life of its own. It has its own mindset, has its own form of logic. I mean, there's even a point in time where the two are arguing,
which is real confusing if you think about it,
because it's like, okay, is she arguing with another part of her mind? Is this somebody, are you realizing that that part of your mental capacity is fully like conscientious, like, is it aware? There's a lot of questions that you have, and it makes it difficult to try to pinpoint exactly, because this movie has so many things going on, and it's hard to look at it and say, okay, I'm going to focus on that. But then if you focus on that, you're like, wait, I can't just focus on that, because there are things happening that I need to pay attention to. And it's all creepy, like every single bit of it. I have never seen so many instances where people morph, and I am worried about what they're going to morph into. So it's a trip. This movie is just one kind of mind trip after another. And I will never, ever, ever condone the use of drugs, but watching this movie high probably is an experience in itself.
Oh, that seems like a bad idea.
What were we talking about the other day that we were saying watching that particular movie while under any kind of substance would be dangerous? What was the first Satoshi Kon movie we covered this week, this month?
It's been a long month.
It was Millennium Actress.
Oh yeah, with the phasing in and out of reality. Yeah, that'd be hard to keep track.
This was hard to keep track with, in terms of like, because you don't, it's completely like, I will go as far to say is Inception stole their premise from this movie. Like the whole element of like, of how Christopher Nolan, well, full disclosure to anybody, like full spoiler warning for anybody who hasn't seen, you know, Inception, but whether or not Leonardo DiCaprio is actually out of the dream and in the real world at the very end, totally stole that from Paprika.
Oh, yeah, because that's the same question they ask here.
Exactly.
Like, who cares?
And the thing is that in the movie, it doesn't stop. Like, they ask the question, and then there's a whole other plot point that's being developed at the time, and it's like, oh my gosh. Like, it's an inception within an inception, and it's trippy. Honestly, the biggest expectation for me in this film, and I'll be honest, the biggest expectation for me was, I was hoping, and mind you, I work a very stressful job, so I was really hoping that I would not pass out during the middle of the movie. Full disclosure, that was my biggest concern coming into this, because I've already come to have this appreciation, if you will, for Satoshi Kon. The man has proven himself to me as being a worthy filmmaker to have in my kind of trophy room of incredible movies I've seen. He has earned that spot in high marks. There is nothing that he has done that I have not seen that has not impressed me immensely. And this is coming from, I'm a very picky person when it comes to certain anime. I don't like a lot of anime. Our intern, Amy, who was supposed to be on today's episode, however, she was unable to due to the fact that she had to kind of address her own podcast, which is the Capeless Crusaders, as we've mentioned. They're doing their episode tonight. But we had... Amy always tries to get me to watch unique anime. And the thing is that I can't watch everybody's anime. Because it's not for me most of the time. Like, full honesty there. I can watch some of it, but a lot of it is just not in my wheelhouse. Like, like she was mentioning, she was talking to us earlier, I like Castlevania. I like Death Note. I like, you know, original Avatar. I like original, like, Dragon Ball Z, not Dragon Ball GT, not any of the other, no.
No, who liked Dragon Ball GT?
I don't know. I will always just leave that door to itself because I'm not going to make that argument with anybody. But like, because Dragon Ball fans are crazy. That's very true. You know, things, Pokemon, original Pokemon, a lot of the, like, it's very limited, but there's kind of a pattern to it, I guess, if you want to call it. However, I'm very particular. I don't like a lot of anime. And this man has created hit after hit after hit with me. And I you know, I mean, what else can you say? The man makes it each and every time. And for me, I don't doubt that he was able to do it with this one. I had never seen Paprika prior to this. Like, I maybe had seen it like in passing.
I thought you had seen this one.
I remember seeing something. I may have only seen like half of it. I don't remember seeing
how can you only watch half of this insane movie?
Because I only remember up to a certain part.
Huh.
So that's why I was like, I could have swore I seen this movie, and then we were watching it yesterday. I'm like, why don't I remember this? Like, I wasn't gonna say it out loud, but I was like, what's happening here? So it's definitely a movie that I was worried I was going to have trouble staying awake through.
Mm-hmm.
Not because it's Satoshi Kon, but because I was tired. Mm-hmm. And this movie put my brain through its paces. Like, I watched this movie and I kid you not, I was my brain was hard at work trying to make sure I was remembering exactly what was that. It's like, okay, so she's in the dream right now, but then he's also in the dream, but then also she's in this other dream. And then her counterpart, Paprika, is over here in this dream. But at the same time, this guy and this other doctor are in the dream. But then now they're all awake, but still in a dream. Like, I was trying.
Yeah, once everyone's awake and it's a dream, things go off the rails real hard.
It was really pushing the limits of my capability. But nevertheless, this movie still held my attention. Like, I was dead tired, and I think I may have nodded off once, but it was probably in between, you know, situations happening. But the movie was like engaging. It was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
We were watching the movie with one other person, and he was snoring loudly, so I don't know about that, but it's okay, because you know what, as long as I saw the movie, it was great. And the biggest thing about this movie is it's still something unique. I'm not experiencing anything like brand, like something that's been reworked and rewatched. I mean, mind you, I've seen Inception, but now that I know this came before Inception, I'm like, dude, this is much better. Like, this is something that, I mean, Inception's okay, but it's getting bloated. It's just a movie. It was okay, it was done well, but it's not anything like I gotta go and, you know, write home to. This movie is unique, and like that whole theme song is stuck in my head. I kid you not, that thing that Christopher Nolan created, I could go away with it. I don't want to hear that ever again. But that theme song and that parade, I think I have a phobia of parades now. Like, because some of the things that I was watching that parade, I'm like, toys shouldn't do that. They shouldn't look like that.
Okay, so it's been a while since I've last seen this movie, but like, since we decided we were going to do this movie, mm-hmm. I've had both like the main theme song and the parade just like switching off in my head like the whole week. So I have been super excited to get into this movie.
So as we dive into this movie, and by the way, when I mentioned that person who was falling asleep, I meant my brother. He was snoring on the couch. But as we dive into this movie, we're going to talk about a couple things that may actually be spoilers. Honestly, talking about this film, if you haven't heard of this film, you at least at one point in time have heard about it or have had somebody tell you about it. But it's nothing like out of the ordinary. Like I said, if you've seen Inception, or if you've seen just about every film out there has taken liberties from this movie, to be honest. So this is going to be a spoiler-filled review. But as we dive into this movie, one of the great things that you have to recognize is the roots that it kind of holds into in terms of like traditional anime, and then kind of jumping off the charts. Like, I love the opening. The opening is really great because, this being a film podcast, it actually opens in somebody's dream. And as they're kind of going through different elements of like, oh, they're in like a detective scene, and then they move to like this spy scene, and they move, like, as they're switching through these scenes, it is so great because you have this incredible opportunity to give homage to different films that people didn't really get. Like, immediately as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, hey, that's Roman Holiday. Like, I knew Roman Holiday, the whole scene where they're fighting and she ends up hitting somebody over the head with a guitar. I was like, hey, that's cool. But this movie opens, the way this movie opened just really caught my attention and the way it works. And then you find out, oh, it's a dream. And then you're introduced to like to Paprika, which now that I'm thinking about it, like then you're wondering, was the scene in the beginning actually happening, or was that also a dream? Because it has Paprika in it.
Are you talking about the
very beginning
with the
client? No, yeah, well, with the client after he wakes up out of that.
Oh yeah, no, that's a dream too.
What the heck?
So, because she doesn't exist. So any scene she's in, there's some sort of dream state.
So anytime you saw Paprika in anything, mm-hmm. it was a dream sequence.
Yes.
So she is essentially the spinning top.
Yeah. Really? Yeah, actually, that's a really good... Yeah.
Or what was it in the movie? A totem or...
Yeah, totems.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, we just kind of spoiled that one for people, but it's okay. Whatever. But just the way that opening scene kind of dictates how the rest of the film is going to kind of transpire, and you have an understanding based on that alone, it really does set the tone and set the pace for what to expect. Because the opening sequence, even the title sequence, really holds its roots to like traditional anime. But then at the same time, you have opportunities where things like the use of technology and the usage of things where Paprika is acting as though she is kind of floating through different areas of the world or around the city as she's driving home, which there you go. That's a whole other thing. Cause like she's driving home, but then she's kind of like also in other areas, and it's at the beginning is very difficult to
picture. Yeah, the movie throws you into the deep end by explaining nothing right up front.
It's immediately.
Just, it's immediately you're met with like, oh, this detective's at a circus, but then all these inanimate objects are talking with them. Mm-hmm. He sinks into the floor. It's real wild. And then like the credits start, and like it's just following Paprika as she's just bouncing across like all of like her hometown. And it's just madness.
Which, mind you, that opening sequence,
it's great.
And creepy, because you have these people from the audience converging on this cage that has the person in there. And you have men, women, children, clowns, because it's at a circus, clowns and all whatnot. But they all have the detective's face on. And it's like, yeah, that really is disturbing. Creepy and disturbing. And it was good. Like I said, this movie really has a lot of great elements of horror, sci-fi, and anime. Like, I would see this movie again in a heartbeat just because of the fact that I haven't felt that anxious, that amount of anxiety in a movie in a long time, especially when it comes to anime. Anime, it's difficult to find opportunities to be emotionally challenged on that kind of level, like to have things like, oh, I'm going to watch this and it's supposed to be scary, but then at the same time, I don't know. And you watch it and it's like, meh. Like it's okay. This movie sincerely questioned my mental capacity of handling morphing Asian dolls turning into short, chubby little men. And then, or like, it just, there were so many elements of this that were just like, oh my gosh. Like the scene where the man puts his hand, like, it looks like he's going to abuse a woman who's tied up. And he puts his hand down by her pants, and then he just slips his hand under her skin. And it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's hardcore. Like, okay, we're watching this. All right. Not going to kink shame or anything, but I'm just saying that's just hardcore stuff. I know it's not. I know. It's just a lot. I'm still processing. It was the snoring. But no, it was a lot. Like, there are so many elements to this movie that really question the direction of where anime should have continued on and where we were left off with. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know of anybody who's doing anything like that as of late.
Like, just even backing out of this movie for a quick second and just looking at all of his works, I don't, like, there's no one I can even think of that I know of in, like, the anime world who's like Satoshi Kon with his just insane premises for things between, like, Paprika and Paranoia Agent. I've never seen anything like those two.
Yeah.
Like, from someone else.
And the interesting thing about this whole, his whole mindset, it's not gratuitous. Like, it's not, let me scar you for the sake of scarring you.
Yeah.
It's like, there is a purpose behind what I am putting on the screen. There is a story behind it. There is a lesson. There's a life lesson. There is a truth to be understood. You know, never fall asleep in movies. There's an idea that he insists on you understanding before the movie is over. And in between all that, like take for instance, and mind you, I don't think I will ever get over gushing about Tokyo Godfathers, because Tokyo Godfathers was an absolute gem. Mm-hmm. For a movie that I thought was going to be probably his mainstream offering to the world, that movie holds so many ethical, moral, on the subject of humanity truths that I've seen in any movie in a long while. And yes, it's a cartoon. Yes, none of it is feasible or realistic in the real world. However, that doesn't take away from the fact that this movie spoke so much more truth in it than, to be quite honest, the presidential debates that are going on tonight. Gosh. Right now.
Yeah, let's date this review.
Exactly. And that's such a unique state to be in, because of the fact that this movie is another example of him taking anime to another level and pushing the element of understanding to a whole higher tier. Like, we're now watching, like, with this film, we're watching things that people were wishing. At one point in time, Christopher Nolan was wishing he could put onto the big screen. And then a few years later, we get Inception. And I'm pretty sure millions of people know Inception. Mm-hmm. But not a lot of people know Paprika. And to recognize that this movie began as a movie, an anime movie, before it even became, you know, Christopher Nolan's work, it does kind of bug me, but it also lets me know how far ahead Christopher Nolan was. You know, I think plain and simple. I mean, I'm sorry, Satoshi Kon was. Sorry. How far ahead Satoshi Kon was. Because in the idea of what we got out of the extremely short and unfair, and I'll be honest, unfair, amount of time we had with Satoshi Kon and his work, I think the fact remains is that his work would have redefined, and still does, I mean, it still redefines, but, you know, with it already here, people are already kind of catching up, getting the idea, but his work would have continued to redefine what anime was and is and could be. And that's just kind of the idea of where his career and here's his filmography was going. And mind you, I'm actually interested in trying to find out if they've actually put his incomplete works out there somewhere, or like if he's...
I would be so down to watch that incomplete film. Like, even if someone could just storyboard whatever the rest was supposed to be, I'd be totally into it.
Is that like that Deep Space Nine documentary we
saw? Yeah, I'd be totally into it. Were they just like, hey, this is what season 8 of Deep Space Nine could have been. I'd be into seeing, like, you know, what they actually have during, because they have something. Mm-hmm. Because I've seen, like, animated cells from the movie, so there's some parts of it.
Yeah.
But I'm just very curious.
No, and mind you, that would be something that would be totally cool to see.
Mm-hmm.
I just, to be quite honest, I really hope they don't, like, Bruce Lee this whole thing. Like, Game of Death this whole thing.
Nobody.
I'm just saying, there are people out there, like, oh, bro, I could totally finish this movie for him. Like, just give me $5 million and give me the vocal talents of Bruce Willis and, you know, and Megan Fox, and we'll totally get this done right, bro. Like, I know there's probably someone out there who's probably, like, thinking they could be the next Satoshi Kon when they're not even a good Michael Bay. Like, I know there are people out there like that. And that's the unfortunate truth. People will probably give them the opportunity. I just really hope, and I know we've been sidetracked from the actual movie itself, but but I just, to speak about any movie from Satoshi Kon is to speak of a portion of Satoshi Kon's life that he had imparted into the movie itself. Plain and simple. You look at any movie that he's done and you're looking at a piece of the man. And this movie is probably birthed out of his love for sci-fi. And mind you, it is based on a book. He did adapt it from a novel, but the fact is he put it into fruition. Like, he created what we saw and put it into visuals so that we could see as an audience. And that's something that not many people can do. Like, obviously, if you're inspired and you get an idea of what people are doing or what people want, like Christopher Nolan, you can create something and, you know, create the piece that you interpreted as. But I digress. It is what it is. I just, like I said, I really hope they don't Game of Death this and, you know, piecemeal and make some kind of offhand conglomerate casserole of this movie.
So I decided to look up what was happening with that, because I remember hearing that Satoshi Kon made someone promise to him that this movie would be finished.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because he really wanted to get it out. But this man, Mamoru Yama, he's the lead at a place called Madhouse, which I think is the production company for Dreaming Machine.
I was going to say.
As of August of 2018, he said that the movie will not be completed or released in the foreseeable future because there are no directors that are up to Khan's level to be able to finish it. They've apparently gotten 600 of the, 1,500 shots for the movie so far. So it's a little under halfway done.
So there is, like...
Yeah, because according to this, like, storyboards and scripts are already completed, and looks like they just need to actually make what it looks like.
Make it, so... Yeah. Wow. So do we have is there an expected date on that? Or?
No, it's kind of just in limbo.
Okay. Well,
it's sad.
It is sad. And the fact that, I mean, here's my thing. I'm kind of worried. Mostly because it's not him, yeah. Number one. Like I said, if there's ever been, I mean, there's been several opportunities. I think you and I actually talked about that one time off air about the people who... take over works and fill in for other people.
Mm-hmm.
It's just no bueno. But I don't know. It's there's something about it that just screams not okay.
Yeah, but like this is a bit different because like they've already have like the script complete. Like yeah. It already has his one. Like all you have to do, like you get someone to finish the movie to look about right. Then you put on the Blu-ray some special features. Hey, this is all the stuff that this other guy did stripped out with filled in with storyboards.
I don't know.
I feel like
I mean, we'll see. But making our way back to Paprika. I really like just the dynamic of how this movie goes, there's no real like sense of urgency in this movie. As much as it's about stopping this assailant who has used this prototype machine to infiltrate the dreams of other people who have used the machine, there's never really a sense of like, oh, we have to hurry, or, you know, the bomb's going to, you know, go down in like 5 minutes or something. It just always seems like there's a sense of intentionality. Like everything they're doing is like, okay, they're making it work. They're going, they're doing what they have to do. And it just, it's done methodically, logically. It just makes sense. And that's kind of how the pacing of this movie works. That's how Satoshi Kon does his pacing. It's very much in the mindset of, okay, when I create this movie, when I create the characters are going to be very, unless they're, you know, dim-witted or idiotic, the characters are going to be intentional, they're going to be logical, they're going to be people who are going to see that the choices they make and the things that they do have a bigger impact on the world around them other than just deciding, okay, I'm going to do this, and then boom, they do it, and then it's whatever. And you have to appreciate that, because that's a character development that a writer can't really do on his own without knowing how to properly develop human emotion in anime, mm-hmm. or in any kind of medium. And that's just one of the great things that you recognize with Satoshi Kon. He sees that characters on screen don't just need to be characters, but they need to be relatable. They need to be human. They need to be something that when you look at it, you're like, okay, I could see myself in Dr. Chiba's role, or I could see myself in the CEO's role or the chief's role. I could see myself in those, or the detective, Konakawa. Like, I can see myself in that particular role because either I've experienced that, which they do a great job, by the way, with the detective and his emotional, the backstory of everything that's happening. He is dealing with an emotional trauma that he doesn't remember when it happened. He just knows that this emotional trauma happened, and he needs to figure out why and when it happened. And you look at that and you're like, okay. And mind you, that takes a backstory to the main plot. However, at the same time, it then becomes intersected with the main story plot, and you find out the way he resolves that issue is by essentially careening that into the nefarious plot of the main antagonist in the film, whose goal is to make the whole world destroy itself in chaos. Very Ra's al Ghul from Batman Begins.
Yeah. Once we start talking about the end of this movie, I have so many questions.
I have every question.
What is happening?
Like, this tall Asian person wrapped in tar is bigger than the city, and why is this allowed to happen?
Also, how can a dream destroy reality? I love this movie, truly. I get maybe 80%, 85% if I'm lucky.
And mind you, that's with people paying attention.
Yeah.
You know, you also have those that are snoring, but it's okay. You
I'm not gonna let them move it down.
I'm not. I mean, you know, it's okay though. It's just my brother. But no, this film really creates a complex world within worlds that are all controlled, or actually all control everything else around them in a way that you're not too sure what is real and what's not. And even towards the tail end of the movie, like, to be quite frank, I don't know if what was happening at the end of the film when Detective Konakawa is going to see the movie, like, nothing in there kind of implies that this is still not a dream, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the scary part, in that the idea of this movie is we are inundated with technology, and sometimes when technology takes over, We are unaware of what's real and what's not. And for somebody like Satoshi Kon to recognize that early on in 2006, imagine if you would have saw like where we are today. To be quite honest, like, I don't know if he would be surprised, because of Paprika kind of nails it on the head, the movie, in terms of where the world is now with electronics and with the saturation of media in the day-to-day world we are in today. But it's so trippy how this movie is kind of the expose on where the world is today, even though it's back in 2016, almost 15 years ago.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, 15 years ago. I was like, wait a second. Yeah, like almost 15 years ago.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And it's not wrong. And the funny thing is, I don't know if you know this, the movie actually is supposed to take place in 2012.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that, no.
So, I mean, not too far off, but it doesn't surprise me. I'm surprised we don't have that technology now to, like, inundate ourselves into...
Glad we don't.
I mean, hey, with enough examples of why it's not a good idea, let's hope somebody's watching movies. But also another element of this particular film that I have to appreciate, I love the dynamic of how the art style of the characters are and the dynamic of the animation in this film. I was getting some really, really heavy vibes in this movie from Ghost in the Shell. I don't know if you've ever seen Ghost in the Shell, original.
I've seen a little bit of
it. From the original back in like 1996 or something. Like, I was getting extremely strong vibes. And it was great because I like Ghost in the Shell. Like, not the most recent, not ScarJo. No, bad ScarJo, bad.
Did anyone like that?
No, nobody did.
Okay. I didn't bother to watch.
Well, you were lucky. But I love the dynamic of the character makeup and everything, because the body structure of, oh my God, I can't believe I won't remember her name. The main character of Ghost in the Shell. I forget her name every time. She is... I will get it. Motoko. Yeah. Kasanagi Motoko. She's the main character. She's the main cyborg, if you will. Half human, half robot. But her character's design is very similar for some reason to Dr. Chiba in this movie. And that's part of that whole, like, holding to anime roots. Like, those were really great callbacks. Not to mention a lot of the design and a lot of the traditional looks from some of the toys in the parade. This movie does a great job of recognizing all the great things of the past. For either anime or Asian culture. And I appreciate that heavily in this movie. One of the things to really kind of recognize, though, like I was mentioning earlier, the animation style really is... I don't know if he wasn't using the same animators that he used prior in Millennium Actress and... Tokyo Godfathers, did he?
So luckily, I thought ahead and thought you might ask that question. The guy who was the art director for this movie actually was also for Tokyo Godfathers and Millennium Actress and Perfect Blue.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, wow. So, I mean, a lot of the great detail that's in Tokyo Godfathers and Millennium Actress, you can definitely recognize that in this movie. Mm. One of the other unique things about this particular art style is it's really subtle use of CG. It's not overt, it's not in your face, but it does help kind of loosen the joints of certain scenes. It doesn't have a lot of it doesn't weigh heavily, like it's not complete. I can't speak right. It's not completely relying on CG. You can look at this movie, you can watch this movie and still see the true animation art styles of the film without sacrificing any of the concern for, oh, well, now it's turning into Toy Story. No, that's not the case.
No.
What were some of your thoughts on the movie? You said you were going to have some questions about the tail end of it. Like, as the movie continues, it kind of takes this nosedive into Creeperville with with the way everything changes. You find out, like we said, just a full spoiler alert, you find out that the CEO was behind it to try to stop them from infiltrating into other people's dreams. And by stealing the piece, he then is causing mayhem so that he could control the world himself?
Well, no. See, this is the thing I was trying to think about today, was what was the CEO's goal? Which seems like a kind of crazy thing to have a question about in the movie. But I don't think that it was just total world domination. I think part of it is that he just wanted to walk again. Because if you think about during the movie, one of his accomplices dies, and this is the part where the dream world starts to crash into reality.
Mm-hmm.
He starts sinking into the floor. Why that happened, I don't quite understand why the hole started forming at his place, because that seems odd. But a hole starts forming in the town, and it starts at his place, and he's like clawing after it. He's like, you know, like, I've put so much work in, like, to this plan, like, you're leaving with my body. I need your body. Like, he it seems like his new, like, goal was just to, like, at the very least, just get a new body, because he is disabled and needs a wheelchair.
He's in a wheelchair. The CEO is in a wheelchair throughout the entire movie. And he is like the biggest proponent for the use of this technology by anybody else, yet he is obviously, and mind you, not that it matters, but I kind of suspected it was him right away, because he just seemed like...
Well, that's because his face looked like
he looks really like sketch. He's like albino white with grayed out eyes, and I'm like, dude, you got villain written all over your face.
100%.
But the CEO is the biggest proponent for the usage of this technology, and yet he is glorifying it. At
the one who's against this technology, because he's like, we should never have done this.
Yes, he's against the usage of it. He's against the development of it.
Right.
You know, he is there to blast them when they find out that two of the devices or three?
I think it was three.
Three of the devices go missing. So that's a unique part. It's really interesting, his development, and then as well the other guy, his accomplice's development, which I didn't see that kind of coming. Like, he just seemed like it's an anime. Everybody has feelings for everybody. So I was like, all right, this dude is probably just too close for comfort because he likes the girl. But no, he ends up being the accomplice. But about the beginning of the third act, you are kind of in this state of like, all right, well, I think they're still in the dream world.
Yeah, like before we get to the third act, like the movie's pretty followable. Like,
oh yeah,
100%. Everything makes sense. It's just once you get in there and that hole opens up in the town, that's when things start running into problems.
Yeah, it literally goes completely downhill from there in terms of the rabbit hole, because then you get instances where the doctor and the chief are walking and they're wondering if it's still a dream. And then this giant Asian doll in traditional garb appears out of nowhere.
The best thing about that is like the scenes focus on them just following them along as they're walking down a corridor, and then all of a sudden, like in the background, they don't even notice it at first. It's like this big doll face.
Yeah.
And then it just has like the most horrendous laugh. Like, it just starts laughing and like breaks all these windows.
Yeah, and it's creepy as all get out.
It's
like
great.
It's And then it starts like doing the whole Godzilla thing and starting to kind of like destroy the building. And then you get an appearance of Paprika there, and you're like, all right, so this is a dream. Okay. And you're watching and you're like, is this a dream? Like, everybody is dreaming, but then they decide they're going to start traveling across town by jumping into televisions and coming out of cameras. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think this is a dream. Like, it was at that point where in the most Morgan Freeman of voices, it was at that point where, you know, like,
no, that's the point where, like, she's just hopping in the television. It's like, hey, let's go. I'm like, I understand, like, this is a dream in reality, but, like, how does reality stop having laws that function?
Yeah.
Like, that's where the movie, like, starts to lose me. And I'm like, I get doing that in a dream. Makes sense, oddly enough. But once, like, just, because, yeah.
Spencer was literally tongue-tied. So it definitely gets into the point where you just have to sit back and watch at that point in time, yeah. Because if you're trying to catch up with the movie and try to recognize all the moving parts and logically have it make sense, I don't think you're going to be able to follow.
Yeah, because this movie does take, like, the stance that, you know, some dreams don't make sense. And the thing about this parade we've been talking about is that it came from a psychiatric patient. Like, it's part of his, like, delusional dream. And his dream is being used by the CEO, and he's merging everyone into this delusional dream state.
Yeah.
And that's why there's so much just madness happening, because people are like jabbering on about literal nothing, because like they're seeing like this delusion and it's just sucking them in.
Yeah.
And so like at the end, it's all about stopping the CEO and his delusional dream state, which they do by turning Dr. Sheba into a baby, and she eats him.
Like, they totally 2001 A Space Odyssey this. Because, like, she gets eaten by a robot.
Yes.
Who is actually the dream version of the doctor who created the...
He's the real version of
the DC
doctor.
Mini.
Yeah.
He's the actual guy who developed this technology. And he's in a dream state at this particular moment. But in his dream state, he believes himself to be a toy robot.
Right.
Who then proceeds to eat the doctor.
Right.
Whom we find out later on that the doctor, Dr. Chiba, has an affection towards this particular individual. Which, mind you, and here's one thing I said out loud while we were watching the movie. Before my brother started snoring. I leaned over and I told him and said, watching this guy eat makes me feel sick. And truly, this guy was extremely large, like unhealthily large. I don't even know if that's a word, but it's my word. There's a scene where they've just realized that they have lost the technology. One of the assistants, I guess, in the lab may have taken them. Because that's what their assumption is. Mm-hmm. And then they go to a restaurant to discuss what their next steps are. And while they're sitting there, there is a waitress who is bringing plate after plate of food to this table. And you think, all right, they're going to have a meal. And she goes, and who ordered this? And who ordered that? And who ordered this? And every time, it's the large genius. And watching him eat, it's like, I know it's a cartoon, but how are you still alive?
Yeah.
Like, it's not okay. Like, no, nobody should have to deal with that kind of thing in terms of, I don't know, not fitting in like a regular chair. It's scary. And it sincerely made me sick. I mean, I wasn't grossed out or anything, but it just was like, I'm like, man. I want to go run a mile now.
Yeah, that's the effect I had on me. I was like, I should be eating healthier.
We had pizza tonight, and the first thing I was like, I just need one slice. I'm just going to stick with one slice. Yeah. But, yeah, it's definitely a movie that really kind of redefines how you look at sci-fi anime. Because yes, there were instances back in the day with like Akira and like I mentioned, Ghost in the Shell and, Alita or Battle Angel, Alita. I could go on. There's a ton of different animes out there that, you know, carry that, sci-fi moniker. But what Satoshi Kon did kind of reset what we were used to with anime and sci-fi, because if you think anime and sci-fi, you think like retro-esque metallic robots, you know, things like you expect some type of new world futuristic cyberpunk style type of thing, which, let's be honest, Akira, Ghost in the Shell, Alita, all those kind of set the stage for a lot of that. But now we're looking more in the realm of just technology. Even Cowboy Bebop. Cowboy Bebop, we were just talking about that the other day. We saw a few of the episodes. Cowboy Bebop in itself, an anime series back in 1999, was futuristic. It was very much the epitome, if you will, at the time of science fiction and Western, you know, put together. Before obviously we got Firefly. But it still was futuristic, flying ships, robots, things like that. This is sci-fi for the sake of the story element and not just the visuals. And like Spencer mentioned, the science fiction part about it, all of that was the backdrop to the bigger element of it all. And it posed the question, what if the biggest crime anybody could ever do is steal your dreams? You know? And it's a question that not many people have been able to answer. Even Christopher Nolan was kind of on it a little bit, but all in all, this did it before. And I'm grateful to be able to see it, because the fact is that this movie is probably going to be bought the next time I get a chance to go on Amazon. And it's going to go into my collection along with a lot of his other movies. But it's definitely an opportunity to see something that was so far ahead of its time and yet was taken away from us so too much too early. But that is the nature of things. And that is the nature of what the truth is about this situation. But going back to Paprika, it's an incredible movie that I cannot really truthfully explain, but I know that I will be spending a lot more opportunities trying to make it make sense, at least to myself in any instance, if not to anybody else. But before we wrap this up, Spencer, did you have any other things you wanted to add?
No, I think we covered most of the important things from this movie.
About being confused and...
Yeah.
Being horrified and
yeah, because like I was doing some reading up on this movie today, and one of the things that Satoshi Kon didn't want this movie to be is like wrapped up in a bow at the end of it. He wanted
it's not. Not at all.
He's like, I want people to basically understand like, you know, 70-ish% of this movie and then to talk about the rest of it. Which, you know, you got to respect, because like he's done a fantastic job with this movie.
I think that's a great point to end off on. So as we wrap this up, I'll go ahead and go first, because the man who actually has seen it before I did, Spencer, I'll let him go last. The film passes for me. Like I said, it's a great mixture of horror and sci-fi, and I absolutely adore this movie. I think it's going to be one of those movies that I'm going to have to rewatch several times to kind of get all those little pieces that I missed on the first time. And it sounds like it's going to be never when I finally fully understand the movie, which is fine with me, because this movie has so much to it that make the makings of it, that make the foundation of it such a beautiful world that even though the chaotic nature of dreams and whatnot is a part of it, I still wouldn't mind being a part of it as well. In terms of Monocles, I give it a 5 out of 5. This movie is beyond expectation. This movie really did redefine what it means to be a sci-fi anime film, and it redefined all the expectations of what anime could do at the time. So, I got to give it a 5, and I hope that I get a chance to see it again soon. What about you, Spence?
All right, well, this movie passes for me. Still holds up as a fantastic movie, even though I do not understand it. Like, that's the crazy thing about this movie. I don't understand it fully, but I love it. And I have since I first saw it. So it's 5 out of 5 for me. I really recommend if you like anime. Maybe you're in... Well, maybe don't start here. But, like, if you like anime and you know it, you should definitely check this movie out.
Exactly. Well, that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out at our website at filmlosophers.com, where we have over 200 episodes, all of that goodness gracious stuff. We even did a whole month in July. Was it July?
May?
Yeah, I'm sorry, for in May.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, because it was...
Yeah.
Anime. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be anime. Yeah, we did a whole month in the month of May. Of just focusing on Studio Ghibli films, specifically films by Miyazaki himself. Check that out if you like anime and if you like really diving deep into those types of movies. Also, this last month of August, we did a whole month on Bruce Lee. We did everything from The Big Boss to Enter the Dragon. And honestly, check it out. It was a great conversation. Those were all great conversations. And so... we would love to hear your thoughts. Drop us a line on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on our Twitter at Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. But as I said, this was a great conversation, and honestly, recognizing and celebrating the life of one Satoshi Kon, one incredible filmmaker, one great director, a great writer, a man of vision. It was really awesome discovering him this month and really getting into the opportunity to just celebrate somebody who deserves to be celebrated. So I can't wait to see what else he's inspired. And maybe if there's somebody out there who has been inspired by him to create something unique and even close to what he's done.
And if that is you, please help them finish Dreaming Machine.
Exactly. So this was just an awesome opportunity to gush about a great man, and I can't wait to do this again. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.